Content marketing. I'm Amanda Milligan, the marketing director at Fractal, and every week on the show, I interview marketing experts about the ways to know the value of your work and get buy-in for your strategies. This week, we're exploring how to come up with ideas that evoke emotion. I'm really excited about this week's guest because he has a ton of unique experience developing emotional experiences and events. His name is Dave Goodman, and he's the former VP and executive producer of entertainment for the Walt Disney Company, you may have heard of them, and Anheuser-Busch, producing nearly 10,000 live shows, tours, and events. Welcome to the show, Dave.
Oh, thank you for that nice intro. You can tell that's why I'm bald. Too many projects.
It's very impressive, and as we know, just Disney is known for their storytelling, so I think it'll be really interesting to see how those experiences can apply to us marketers who may not do things on that kind of a scale, those types of events and
oh my gosh, experiences. Well, you know what, okay, I'm gonna say it, size doesn't matter. You know, it really is amazing what you can do in terms of story, even if you don't have once upon a time attached to it. So we'll talk a little bit about that when you have a moment.
Yeah, so since all that experience, you've been working on something called spiral thinking. Mm. And I wanna start here because when we talked about this, it was very interesting to me and has so many different applications. Like you even say, it has applications for your personal life, for your work. And I definitely think it has applications for content folks, people who are trying to come up with interesting ideas to engage with audiences. So let's start with, what is spiral thinking and how does it benefit you?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it started a little history, and I'll make it kind of quick on the history side, but it started at Disney when I got there and I felt like I was the least creative guy in the room. And I'm sure that was true. Might have still been when I left, by the way, but as I was really working on it, I was trying to figure out, why do some people have amazing, great ideas and seem to have a plethora of them? And others like me are kind of going, huh, how did they generate those thoughts? So it took us into decades, literally decades of studying the brain, neuroscience, all these thinking models to come up with what we've called the spiral thinking process. And this is really a super simple method to generate huge amounts of executable ideas. And that's kind of the difference. You know, you can sit in a room and come up with a lot of ideas, but at some point you have to be able to execute these ideas. And what we love about the spiral method, and the reason why it's a spiral up, by the way, infinite, not down to the black hole, is we're hugely optimistic. So we're a bunch of optimists, by the way. So, but the reason why you spiral is because in the core of this spiral is a whole box of what we call what matters most, the things that matter most on the project. Now, on a project, it could be different than if you're running a department or if you're the chairman of the board. That's a whole different set of what matters most because everybody has kind of a different perspective. But on a project, for example, if you're creating content, you can define the things that matter most. It might be your customer, it might be an employee, it might be some business to business thing, it could be all kinds of stuff. It could be your personal life. So what's interesting about this is that at the core is this sort of what matters the most. It's sort of purposeful and intentional. And as you spiral and as we generate ideas, we're always looking back at this core to make certain that we're not getting too far off, let's call it off brand. Mm. Okay, if that becomes literally your emotive brand, then you don't want to get too far from that. Otherwise, you'll end up with something like New Coke or some other kind of thing that failed miserably because you never took into consideration the stuff that really matters. And I'm not talking vision, mission, statement here. I'm talking about the stuff that really matters. Okay. So then as we go, we do two things in spiral thinking. First, after we create this little set of pillars, this sort of foundation of pillars, then we generate, what is that thing we're trying to solve? What's the challenge? What is that thing? What's the dream? What is it that we're trying to get after? And we literally sit there for a minute or two and envision success. okay, we're successful. How does it literally, how does it feel to you? What's it doing to you? Are you ecstatic? Are you thrilled? Did you get a raise? Are you getting a pat on the back? Are you standing there with your significant other who says you're amazing? Whatever. But when you envision that success, your whole body changes. Your mind changes, your body changes, you get flooded with all these happy hormones, and literally your mind opens up, your mind changes, and for the better. In fact, studies all over the world at the best universities are proving that the more positive and the more optimistic, the more upbeat you are during a brainstorming session, for example, the more ideas you'll generate. The more
I want to pause here because this seems like a very important takeaway. It seems like, and this is a problem I think a lot of people have, where they have these meetings, it's intimidating, there's a lot of pressure, you don't want to say something dumb, but it sounds like that's hugely detrimental to the creative process.
Hugely detrimental. In fact, that's why brainstorming is also already a bad term. We call it dreamscaping. Okay, we're looking for dreams here. We're not looking to storm your brain. And so we don't allow any kind of sort of inner critic. During a dreamscaping session, you shouldn't be criticizing your own ideas, let alone anyone else's.
Yeah.
So it's not just, oh, every idea is a good idea. Well, that's not really true. In fact, there are very few great ideas. There's some good ones and there's a lot of other mediocre ideas. But the notion is all ideas lead to something. They can take you backwards and make you go to a different direction. They can move you to a complete different abstract state of mind, whatever, but all ideas matter and all ideas have a chance to take you to the place where you need to go to reach your final destination. But once you've assembled all those ideas, and by the way, I should say, in doing so with an optimistic perspective, you use your whole brain, not the left brain or the right brain. The left brain and the right brain concepts, by the way, are kind of falling by the wayside as we learn more about neuroscience. So our particular method uses what the neuroscientist, Dr. Alex Korb at UCLA calls the whole brain. So we're actually tapping into all different parts of our brain, including the emotional parts, including the vagus nerve, which goes to your heart and all into your gut. So you're using all kinds of intuition and all kinds of things. Now, this isn't new agey and this isn't religion and it's not neuroscience and it's practical and it's super simple and easy. And that's the best part. It's super simple and easy, and sometimes hard gets tiring.
Reminds me of in creative writing, some people say, you know, you literally just have to write something and get it on the page and just experience that and be completely open and non-judgmental. And then you go back and you edit it. And this kind of...
Amanda, right on the money. Yeah.
Okay.
And all of these things, the craziest ideas happen. And when they happen, sometimes they form the next five, and number six might be the one. You know, we'll sit with a C-suite of people and they'll think they're going to come up with a half a dozen or a dozen ideas. And the end of an hour, we'll have over 100, 150 ideas. And they'll be shocked that they came up with them. But it's usually because they're doing exactly what you say. They're self-limiting. They say, oh, we did that before. Oh, there are all these roadblocks. And there's always a naysayer in the room. There's always one or two people that are going, oh, that's a terrible idea.
Well, and those examples, sorry to interrupt, but those examples that you just said are so common, in, especially in marketing, like, oh, that's already been done, or no, that doesn't work, or that happens all the time.
All the time, and it's like, well, let's just say, let's put it on the board, because it will spawn another idea and another idea and another idea. And, you know, we are so bad about doing that to ourselves. We self-limit, and this inner critic just keeps, I'm afraid to say it. I'm fearful. I'm going to say something that somebody's going to think is stupid. And you know what? I got to tell you, I have so many dumb ideas and I'm going to throw every one of them out there because somebody somewhere is going to pick up on it and run. And we're going to get something really magical.
Absolutely. Okay. So we're starting at that core purpose.
Yeah.
We're spiraling up into a mentality of optimism.
Yes. Yes.
Now what happens next?
So after we generate like literally dozens and dozens of ideas that are all based in that big idea, that big dream that's sitting out there, it's based on that, but it gets fractaled all over the place, right? So it can go in 100 directions. But in the next step, what we call ideate. We look back at that pillar of stuff and we start to sort and filter. And this is where a naysayer becomes positive, because they can jump in and go, hey, but if we do that, remember that pillar number two over here that you created, is that going to cause a problem? Well, maybe the answer is yes, but that doesn't make it wrong. It just might cause a problem. So let's put that over here on the side and let's say that might be a roadblock we have to approach. If that becomes the best idea, then we have to figure out how to take down that roadblock. I'll give you an example. At Disneyland, we were having issues with fireworks, and the local neighbors were really, really unhappy that it was happening every night. I don't blame them. It's pretty loud, and there's fireworks fallout, and you know there's junk that flies, and it's not a good situation for them trying to put down their three-year-old to bed at 10 o'clock at night, and here comes. But the biggest issue for them was stuff was falling on their car. And so it was like, we can't do them anymore. We can't do fireworks anymore. Well, really? Can we pay for car washes? Let's wash everybody's car for the rest of the year. Let's provide car covers. It was a roadblock that literally we were told no more fireworks. And we said, well, there's all kinds of ways to solve this problem for these people for their car. And we did that and it was very helpful.
That is a fascinating example. I mean, that's a very, as a Disney fan, the fireworks are a very iconic part of the experience, and how easily somebody could be like, okay, that's it. It's over.
That's it. Yeah.
Wow.
So that's a great example. Because they want to be good community members.
Yeah, that makes total sense. But yeah, like to have to immediately just dash it and not come and like think of the alternatives. It's just a really good example of that.
Yeah. And some of these things are not that hard, you know, and they're not always that expensive either. So it can be done.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's sort of the second part. The third part, then we go into design, and that's really just planning your execution, right? How are you gonna execute? So you go into design and the key to the design step with these, now that you've selected the two or three big ideas that you really love, try to design those so that you have winning steps all along the way. So you don't, you know, reach out and try to get to the end immediately. You have a whole series of small steps which help you succeed. And every time you have a small win, again, your whole body gets fed with happy hormones and more optimism and more hope for the future that you're going to be able to make it to the end of this project. But if you go off and you try to take the hardest stuff on first, sometimes that's a difficult way to go. I mean, you better have all hands on deck ready to tackle a big problem early, yes. But, you know, success along the way breeds success at the end. So then the fourth step is execute and implement. And, you know, this is where almost all companies fail. They get to the point where they might even design, maybe not, but they certainly are too, I'm just going to say it, they're just too lazy to execute. Or they're so busy micromanaging the staff that they don't let the staff do what the staff knows how to do. So give the staff the tools they need, which means the right environment, the right kind of lifestyle balance, the right kind of work environment, the skills they need, the tools you have to provide them with that stuff. And post-COVID, if every company isn't doing that and taking a look at how they're going to support their team, then they're going to fail. In this post-COVID world, they better figure out how to make the employee experience as good or better than the customer experience.
What would you say to anyone listening who's in that situation where they feel like they're not getting what they need at a company? How can they address that?
You know what? I'd tackle it. If you can, take it head on. Have a quality conversation with someone, either your direct supervisor or someone in human resources or both, and sit down and talk about what your needs are. I mean, in fact, you could use one of our toolkits. We have toolkits about this on our Mindshare website. You could sit with your leaders and have a real conversation about the things that will make you the most productive and happy employee at the company. And that may include salary. It may include benefits. It may include working from home. But I think every company's got to reevaluate this and relook at, you know, this whole strata of the work environment for the employee. It's critical.
Yeah, so much of this is interconnected. That's what makes it fascinating, but very important as well.
Right. Right.
So do you have an, this is a little off the cuff, but do you have an example of how this has ever worked for you? Like this, this process at work, you gave the fireworks example is great for that, that one so piece, many. I'm sure. Yeah.
So I'll give you an example. Well, I'll give you another fireworks example because that's kind of easy. So it was Disneyland's 45th anniversary and things were fine, but the holiday season looked like it was going to be a problem. There weren't very many hotel reservations by comparison. And it's just, we didn't have a new ride to open and there weren't any new big shows. And so the president of the park came to me and said, we need something. This was in August and we need it now because the holidays are going to open in, you know, 6 weeks and we need attendance. And so the first place I go to, and this is a little easier in entertainment maybe than in some ways in marketing, because we in entertainment, we have time to shape emotion. In marketing, it's like, you know, it's quick, it's commercials, mm-hmm. It's on the web, it's a thing, it's a byline. But in entertainment, you know, we might have 10 or 15 minutes or longer to actually tell a story or whatever. So I walked into the president with a picture of a man who looked like he was probably 30-ish, holding up a little boy who was reaching up with his hand, with his tongue sticking out, trying to catch a snowflake. And I went, Christmas season is coming at Disney. We've never snowed at a Los Angeles park. What if we could make it snow? So I went into the president and I said, this is what we're going to do. We're going to make it snow at Disneyland. She went, You're not good. How do you do this? So I said, just trust us. We need X amount of money-ish. And I asked for a range of money. And we're going to make it snow. We're going to actually do a fireworks show about the holidays. But we're going to use Disney brand. But we're going to tell a story that kind of sounds like grandma. Because most people have a grandma that they relate to. And they're going to hear this grandma voice. And then we're going to call it something like Believe. You can believe in magic, or you can believe in Christmas, or you can believe in whatever, you, Santa Claus, whatever you believe in. And at the end of the fireworks show, we're going to make it snow. And everybody will stay around to watch the snow. You know, So we did it and it went crazy. And it saved the year financially. I'm not taking credit for it. I'm just saying that, and it's a team of people, by the way. It's not me. It's a whole team of people that things work. It's hundreds of experts and all kinds of other great people in marketing who talked about it properly. But because of that, we started with the emotion first. What was it we were trying to capture? I'm trying to capture the nostalgic thing that happens between generations and that thing that happens between a father and a son or a mom and a daughter, whatever, that I can't wait to see my child experience something for the first time. I want to see through their eyes. I want to have that emotional feeling. That's what we were selling. We weren't selling snow at Disneyland. We were selling this chance for people to, to see this thing, to go, I don't know how they did it or what's happening here. It's Los Angeles. It's still, you know, 50 degrees out, but there's snow falling. And I get to watch this through the eyes of my kid, or if you're a grandparent, through my grandchild's eyes.
See, and I'm from Fort Lauderdale.
Yeah.
And I had never seen snow. And I went to Disney World when they did that when I was younger. And it was the coolest thing.
Well, thank you. I'm glad to hear.
Yeah, it was very, I was like, because we used to make sandcastle snowmen. And so right, we didn't have that kind of Christmas. So it was a different kind of emotional impact, like similar in LA, but so there's two things I want to unpack with this example. You're talking about emotion. I want to spend the rest of our chat about that.
Okay.
But first, with this spiral thinking, so what are the phases of this story you just told? Can you plug them in so it's very obvious?
Yeah, so I would have gone all the way back to setting up the pillars of what matters most. So the first thing, I'd look at demographics and I'd say, who are we trying to draw here during that time period? Well, we're trying to draw locals because it's already too late for most of the out-of-state people and foreigners to travel here. So we're trying to get locals. So what have locals not done? Well, most locals haven't seen the snow, even though there's snow, you know, an hour away on Big Bear. They don't, unless you're a skier, you don't go. So that kind of check that box. So we, as we went through all those pillars, we looked at all these different kinds of foundational things. Are we going to use the brand? Of course we're going to use the brand, right? We also had a timeline. We had a really tight timeline, and we also had a budget. So we use these pillars to kind of create what I would say building a better box, rather than trying to think outside the box, which is not only a tired cliche, but a worthless one. We all have parameters by which our projects are confined. There's some level of confinement with every project I've ever had. There's a timeline, there's a budget, there's a client, there's a customer, there's a this, there's a that. Those things become the box. And if you build it with more specificity, and if you build it with more enthusiasm, you have a lot better chance of then hitting the target. If you put a bullseye in that frame, you'll hit that target on the bullseye rather than hit it on the edges. So the specificity of figuring out what matters most is the first thing I did, right? And we did as a team. So then the second thing was to decide, how do we want them to feel at the end of this? When the guest is done, what do we want them to feel? We want them to feel, we wanted them literally to happy cry.
So this is the dream part. This is like, what do we want at the end of this?
Yes.
Okay.
This is the dream part. At the end of this, we want them happy and crying. Then as a team, we sat there and went, how would we feel if we pull this off? It'll be a miracle because we don't have time. We've got to get all this together. We have to write original music. We've got to get songs. We've got to get pyro. We got to get all this different kind of pyro. And we weren't going to shoot a big finale. You know, most fireworks shows end up with thousands of, hundreds or maybe dozens of shells in the air, and everybody, it's really loud. We did just the opposite because we wanted people to feel touched. So we had silent shells at the end that drifted down really slowly. And as they drifted down, the snow started happening, and the snow then fell on the people. So all of the, again, the emotive part was so critically important, because to get them to want to come back, right? Because that was one of our pillars. We need them to come back over and over and over. Why? Because theme park revenue is built on attendance, length of stay, and repeat visitation. So we have to get them in the door to see it. We want them to stay all day and into the night, because when they stay later, they buy more food, they buy more merchandise, they get cold, they buy a coat, they buy a fleece or something, right? And we want them to tell people it was really cool, and please, you got to go see this thing. In fact, we'll go with you again. And that's exactly what happened. So it was a hit, and versions of that same thing are still happening every year.
Yeah.
So it's still going.
So is it often the case that when we talk about emotion, and I completely agree that is, when we talk about marketing, it's so much a factor in everything, or it should be at least. It isn't always, but it should be a factor in everything that's created. Does it usually come into play in this dream part of the process, or is this a pillar sometimes as well? Like where does it come into the process?
You define it. But for me, before you go too far into any level of ideate or design, you have to start with the emotive takeaway first. And you know, the beauty of books, movies, art, photography, you know, commercials, all of those things tend to follow somewhat of a formula, right? They're taking you somewhere. Now, I know a lot of artists who don't care what you feel. They just want you to feel. We're a little more specific. We want you to feel a certain way because it drives certain kinds of behaviors, right? And this is a little more of a commercial. What I'm talking about here is a little more commercial and a little bit more capitalistic. So if you're in a theme park, you want people to come back and you want them to stay long. So to do that, you don't want to scare them away. You don't want them to go, oh, well, I hated it. In a museum, some artists want that. They're looking for that kind of emotion. You know, Andy Warhol, when he did these Campbell soup cans, he wasn't saying whether he wanted people to love it or hate it. He was just trying to make an artistic statement. So there's a difference, right? When we're trying to, I'll call it, orchestrate an emotion out of someone, there's certainly ways to do it when you get to the design phase with color, with fonts, with shape, with, I mean, you, here's a Disney example. Almost all Disney villains are angular. Almost all Disney princesses and other things are roundish.
I've never noticed that, but now that you say it, I can see it.
Yeah, sharp teeth, sharp jaw, sharp ears, sharp something, right? Almost all, not all of them, but almost all of them. And so, and that's because the way we perceive things that are angular and sharp is one thing and things that are round as another. Mother and father, and there's lots of other connections I won't bore you with. But even if you look at the way Walt first designed Mickey, he was basically three circles. Two up here and one big circular face. He wasn't a big angular, sharp-edged guy. And a lot of psychologists kind of say Walt was brilliant way before his time because kids can see black and white. And the first Mickeys were black and white before they can start to recognize color. And they recognize the round shape as motherly. And so it means love. So you get attached to Mickey way ahead of time.
Wow. So emotion can play into every stage of this. Every stage of it.
Yeah. And to say that everybody's going to feel the same is wrong. Everybody's not going to feel the same, but you're trying to get sort of that universal truth. What is the universal truth or universal feeling that most people will have if we do this right? If we really start and create this proper emotional arc at the end, will they feel what we want them to feel? And if you hit that bullseye, the answer is yes, and they will return or they will buy it again.
What would you say to folks who work in quote unquote boring industries? Because some people I know listen to stuff like this are like, but we don't operate in like a very exciting space where we can really spark powerful emotion.
I get it. It's a lot easier in entertainment or whatever, you know, certainly. I would say try to find the essence of what makes that thing special. Let's take all the delivery systems that are out there now to deliver food to your door. Okay, not particularly exciting industry in my mind, okay, but emotionally, what's it doing? Well, all this disruption has turned into creation of some level of harmony for the consumer. The customer now has what? They've gotten their time back. That mattered a lot to people, not just during COVID, but it matters to a lot of people every single day. So if they become more time affluent and they have less time debt, what have you done? You've really raised them up in a way. You've given them more life. You've given them some time back with, then they can do something more important to them of what matters most to them. It could be relaxing or working out or being with their kids or taking a bath, whatever. But that industry should play on what its ultimate essence is for, the emotions that drive the people's reasons to do it more than the function itself.
Yeah, that makes total sense. And we often frame it as when trying to come up with ideas, challenges or questions that are then solved or answered.
Yeah.
Which can play into, it's a little less, you know, exciting to think of it that way, but you're kind of getting at if there's a problem or an inquiry.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, we worked with an engineering firm and they did mostly civil engineering. Okay. And I come from a long line of civil engineers and it's not very exciting. So these guys, this particular department was pretty much designing curb and gutter in subdivisions. They said, well, how do we get inspired to do curb and gutter every day? Well, it's not that you're doing curb and gutter. It's that you're building a life for families and people to live in this neighborhood. They'll be safe, right? They're going to be safe. They have a safe place to walk and ride their bike and do these things. And if there's a lot of water, they're not going to get water in their homes. And you need to think of this as on a higher plane than I'm doing another day of curb and gutter. Think of the value you're providing more than the task at hand. And I think everybody needs to search for that in work that seems mundane. You know, we're not always, the work that we have for life isn't always our life's work. And so you have to find the extra kind of good in it. You know, I'm all about trying to find the greater good in things. And I think you have to keep searching for that. Absolutely. And when you do, then focus on that and go as hard as you can to make that the best curb and gutter you could possibly make it.
Yeah. I love that. So for folks listening, Dave co-authored the book, Creating the New American Dream, The Spiral Renaissance Theory. If you're interested in these concepts, also you can go to mindsharenetwork.com where some of those frameworks he was discussing are located. Is there anything that I missed, Dave? Anything important that you think marketers would benefit from that we didn't talk about?
No, thank God for marketers. I mean, where would we, where would we be without, we wouldn't know anything about anything, especially in the 21st century. And I know that, you know, things are changing dramatically and, you know, digital in the last 30 years has really changed. And between AI and big data and everything happening, I think it's going to be, people are going to rely more and more upon honest, transparent, you know, accurate marketing, especially with all the fake news and other kinds of stuff that's out in the world. And, you know, the challenge that people are having with algorithms and you know, how do we keep that perspective when we're trying to get people to do the things we want our businesses to do and be prosperous and all that, and at the same time provide the world with a better place to live. And I don't know how to do what you do, but I admire it.
I agree 100% about the authenticity part, and it's going to be so crucial going forward.
Yeah, absolutely.
So Dave, knowing that we're trying to help content folks, and we talk about all kinds of topics, but creativity being one of them, who would you recommend to be future guests on the show?
Oh my goodness. I'll tell you, there's a gal who I think is the most brilliant customer experience person I know. Annette Franz, F-R-A-N-Z. She has a book out called Customer Understanding. And, you know, I think every marketer should understand the customer journey inside and out, you know, mapping and all that. We're kind of, spiral thinking in a way is sort of a different way to do that. If you put the customer in that spot and you say the big right. idea is the customer, you can do basically something similar. I think she'd be brilliant. I can give you a long list of highly creative, crazy people.
That sounds fantastic.
Yeah, we'll do it. We'll do it. Art directors and composers and film composers and all those kind of people, pyro designers, what you name it.
Well, it's so fun to talk to people in other disciplines where I genuinely believe there's a lot of overlap, even though we may not do the same things day to day, just the way, like we're talking about today, the way you think, the things you focus on, all are beneficial to see from another perspective every now and then.
Well, and collaborating with marketing people is one of my favorite things. Because
that's nice to hear.
No, seriously, because you know, all of this is meaningless without the market, without the consumer, or without somebody to view something, buy something, or whatever. It's kind of meaningless. You know, it's the tree falls in the forest thing. Mm-hmm. So anytime you can collaborate with marketing and try to understand how best to talk about it, we shape a lot of things. In fact, with the Walt Disney Special Events Group that I co-founded, all of our work was with marketing people. We had a team of 50 entertainment people around the world in these five different offices, but all of our work was with all the marketing people from all the other non-theme park Disney business units.
So cruise
lines, ESPN, ABC, Disney stores, I mean, merchandising, on and on and on. And our job was literally to create the entertainment, live entertainment brand or launch, product launch for marketing. Each one of those groups had their own separate entity. So, and they all had different ways of thinking and doing it, but of course, it was with some level of a Disney branded something. So back to that box, back to that build a better box.
Right. Well, Dave, thank you so much for taking the time to come on the show and share your experience and your insight. I really appreciate it.
Oh, thank you. And if anybody wants to shoot me a note, please do shoot me a note at that Mindshare Network site, or you can reach me at davegoodman7@gmail.com. You can reach me that way too, and I'm happy to chat with you anytime.
Awesome. If you've listened to this and want even more tips, sign up for our podcast newsletter by going to the podcast page on the Fractal website. And if you learned anything from this show, we'd love it if you'd subscribe on your favorite podcast platform and leave a review. Finally, if you have feedback, suggestions, ideas, thoughts on how awesome Raya and the Last Dragon was, I watched that recently, it was very good, or anything you'd like to share with me, shoot me an email at amanda@frac.tl. I'm a shameless extrovert who would love to hear from you. Thank you to Sean Kelly for podcast music and editing, and to Joao Pereira for logo design. And thank you, dear listener. I hope you'll join us next time.